What's going on, you guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Strain Forward Podcast. Today's guest, I'm super excited about. We met yet again through the Instagram DMs. I've had quite a few people on here from Instagram DMs, which is awesome. We're just sliding into each other's DMs back and forward. It's great. His name is Mr. Charles Shivers. He has a business by the name of Live Courageous, and he works with men, helping them really heal from their past and overcome these deep-rooted issues that are causing more issues in their day-to-day life that they just can't see. He helps them find the blind spots. So I'm super excited for him to dive into that and help anyone out there, really. I mean, I'm sure this applies to women as well as men, but he specializes in working with men. I'm super excited for anyone out there to listen to this. But without further ado, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, man? What got you into this work?
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on, Kyle. First, let me say that. This is my first ever podcast.
Oh, really?
So if it's terrible, then that's the reason. If it's great, then we can call me like a savant and I'll just do podcasts from here on out. But thanks for having me, man. It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
So how did I kind of get into this? I think, you know, if you looked back at the kind of trajectory of my life, I'm 40 now. I just turned 40 a couple weeks ago, a big milestone. But if you looked back at the trajectory of my life, I was in Christian ministry for 10 to 15 years, somewhere in there, and started really young and really grew up. So I was always around people kind of doing the Christian counseling thing, you know, the pastoral counseling thing. And then I left ministry, got into business, and just couldn't get away from that. And I think part of that was just, it's what I'm kind of naturally drawn to. I'm good at, you know, I like figuring people out. I like cracking that nut that is each person. And so I've been doing it for the last 9 to 10 years. And about 5 years ago, I started my own business that did business coaching, and that kind of morphed. I kind of got back to my roots again of just like, which is, I started Live Courageous 2 or 3 years ago, and that was really, I understand fundamentally what men are going through, and why we keep hitting kind of like midlife crisis points or these major blockers in our life, you know? And I have a degree in philosophy and theology, a master's degree, and so I do kind of think in those kind of what are the global problems here? You know, like, what are the big things that just kind of keep tripping us up? I'm even right now kind of writing a short ebook on kind of the history of that, you know, from Industrial Revolution up until now, like kind of how have we gotten here as men, you know?
Yeah.
I love to do the deep work. And it really comes from my story. So kind of grew up in a dysfunctional family. I went through kind of a lot of hard stuff. There were different abuses that I experienced kind of in my really young years and then again in my teen years.
Yeah.
But I didn't have anybody to talk to about that, you know, and I didn't know how to talk to anybody about that. Certainly, you know, I think like all men, this resonates, like I certainly didn't want to ever admit weakness to anybody. And when you're abused, there's a lot of shame in it and stuff too. So, I didn't do anything about it. So I was a pastor for years, really hurting. So not talking about anything and really knowing, and some of that was really repressed. So I got to a point, around 35 where I started, I had gotten married, I had two kids, I think kind of like as you add more complexity to your life, like all of a sudden I can't keep holding back like the negative things from kind of falling in. And so at 35, I had recently been laid off from the job, which was huge. I was the only breadwinner at that point. So I'd recently been laid off. COVID hit. And I got really sick with Lyme disease. And so that was the moment. I call it my midlife coming of age kind of started. But I think I had just started exploring And I think it was really precipitated by the layoff, like things in my past that I hadn't really ever wanted to look at. And I had started to remember some suppressed memories and stuff. So, man, it was a cluster for sure. It was insane. But having to go through that and having to kind of pick up those pieces in every area of my life, right? It taught me a ton about just what all men go through, at a deeper level.
Yeah, how did you know to so well, like walk me through that. So you're 35.
It's a long answer.
You go through, you lose your job, you get sick, like all these things happen. What triggered in your mind, okay, I need to revisit some things from the past? Like what was it, like how did you know to do that?
That's a great question. I think I knew because I had been in a space for a long time where I was coaching people or I was being a pastoral counselor. So what's funny is I knew the things that other people should do. I just never applied them to myself, because I mean, I can remember just be, I was the guy that was like, oh man, like, yeah, like absolutely go to therapy. You definitely need that. Like, that's going to be so good. Don't, it's, you know, it's great. It's good for you. But I would look in the mirror later and just be like, don't you ever, you will never do that. So for everybody else, it was like, yeah, that's great. That's, oh, it's so strong. For me, it was like, you will never be that weak. And those were just really deeply held, coping mechanisms from being a kid and having to go through the stuff that I went through, but I didn't know that. Like it wasn't like in the conscious part of my mind, all the time. I didn't, I think there's a certain amount of, we grow up and we think our life is normal, because every kid does, what I mean? If your parents are divorced, it's normal. If your dad's not around, it's normal. If you're, whatever, it's normal. Until you kind of get to a point and you realize, oh, that's not normal, So I had already known that, like, I'd already, some of that had already been rewritten because my dad wasn't around. My parents were divorced. There was abuses, So I already knew, like, okay, that's not normal. That's not okay. That's dysfunctional. But I had not actually pressed in and explored it for myself and what it was actually doing to me. So this is kind of a funny story, but, there was a show, it came out in like 2018 or 2019. It was on Amazon. And Anne Hathaway plays a bipolar person in one of these episodes. And I was watching it, and the episode starts, and she's like all happy. Like she's on a high. She's super happy. She's going to the grocery store. She just wants these pears. She gets home and she drops the pears into this bowl. And like I think even in the episode, like the lights dim or something, like the scene changes, and she all of a sudden like hits this like low point, and she's bipolar dramatically in the episode, and so she spends the next 2 days in bed or something, and just something, God, in my heart was like, that's you, and I was like, no, but it resonated so strongly that later I asked my wife, I was like, do I have highs and lows? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, no, but like, and then I explained the episode to her, and I was like, but it's not like that, right? And she's like, no, it's kind of. And I was like, what do you mean? And I just didn't know. I didn't know that I was just so up and down. I mean, to the point that she was like, yeah, we know when you're we, as in like her and the kids, who were tiny at that point, they were, little bitty babies and toddlers. We know when we have to kind of leave you alone for the day. Like it's that bad. And I was like, oh no, like I just didn't really know.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So what was your fear, I guess, around like diving into it? Was your past just painful and it was really hard to face it?
Super painful, yeah. Super painful, and I think this is a place that a lot of I think this is the place that kind of people come to when they know that they have stuff in their past that they have to work through, and they eventually choose not to do it. Because I think that there's lots of people that do that. You know, it's like, I know this is bad, but I'm just going to continue on managing how I always have. I'll just, it's fine. I'll just go from dysfunctional relationship to dysfunctional relationship, or I will, oh, my thing just thumbs up. I'll go to dysfunctional relationship to dysfunctional relationship. I'll just keep drinking. I'll manage it that way. I'll manage it with porn. I'll manage it with whatever coping mechanisms I've put in my life to do that. And I think that happens for some people very consciously. I think that happens for some people a lot less consciously. But shoot, what was the question? I went off on something.
What was the fear around facing that stuff and stepping into
Right.
that therapy?
Yeah. So for me, it was, God, if I go down this road, I'm gonna have to rewrite everything, you know? And I think that is different for everyone. You know, like I have a lot of trauma in my past. Most of the people I work with don't have as much. Some have more, but I think it looks different for everybody. But I think for me, it was, man, I'm really gonna have to rewrite everything. And that initial, like, even admitting it to yourself, like it was actually that bad,
And when you say rewriting
is really
things,
hard.
do you mean, so you say rewriting, do you mean rewriting your beliefs around certain things? So just that whole, the narrative, the story in your head, you knew you were going to have to rewrite it all.
Yeah, I knew it was all going to get shaken. Let's say it that way, right? So, you know, when we grow up, so I have a program that I use that I've created called the B Course. It's like an identity framework for men. And the first module is the Discover module, and you go back into your childhood, your adolescence, and your young adult years, and you figure out the people and forces that shaped you. Because we don't actually ever do that, right? Like, it's very rare that we would do that work. And I had not done that work. And so the people and the forces that shape me continue to shape me until this point in my life where everything fell apart and I was forced to actually take a look, which is like the midlife thing that men can go through. And you know, and if I had done it sooner, I think a lot of that could have been avoided. You know, a lot of that pain and hurt and stuff like that. And so our identity comes from our parents, you know, even if our parents are totally absent. Like I had my dad was around for the first several years and then pretty absent thereafter. And so but that shaped me. I mean, dramatically. You know what I mean? Like I was a abandoned, hurt, insecure little boy. You know what I mean? Who was really awkward around other men because I'd never been around. You know, a mom and a couple sisters, and so yeah. So I didn't want to peel back those layers because I knew there was a lot to it. You know, and I knew a lot of things would get rewritten just about who I am as a person, you know.
Yeah, see, so let's walk through that then. You decide to dive into it. You're like, okay, things
It
are
was either that or, I mean, I'm sure lose my family. So,
it was either what'd you say?
I mean, it was either dive into it and fix it or, you know, have an actual midlife crisis, buy a sports car, have an affair, lose my family, you know.
Yeah, like you were kind of back against the wall. Like this is it. I got to make a decision and face this. I have to. So then, what was the first step and what did the process look like?
It was the height. It was I think it was like the second week of March 2020 when the world, like everybody, went on lockdown. It's when I got sick. So
Also, sidebar. So sorry to cut
which
you
is
off. How did you get
crazy.
Lyme disease? Was it from a tick?
A tick or a mosquito or some undercooked venison.
That's crazy,
That's how
dude.
you get it. Yeah, people don't realize you can get it from mosquitoes. And it's a lot more prevalent than you think it is in Lyme. Lyme is a bacteria. Like if you catch it quick, most people get like a bullseye rash when they have the tick bite. A simple round of antibiotics will kill it if you catch it like within a few weeks. But the Lyme bacteria will burrow into the cell wall, and it's like has a really long lifespan, And so if you don't catch it, it just kind of gets everywhere and becomes really hard to reach and kill.
That's
So
insane.
I actually think I had it for years before I really went down. But when I went down, dude, so I was super active, gym rat, love to run, love to be, super fit. Like, I mean, 5 a.m. at the gym every morning, had to. So when the gym shut down with COVID, right? And I fished out my some old running shoes because I had not been running as much lately. And I pushed myself too hard, went for like a 4 mile run, which is stupid. Woke up the next day just in tons of pain. Like my feet were swollen, I was struggling to walk. And like a gym rat, I was like, oh, it must be my shoes, So I like literally like pulled out my phone, ordered new shoes online. I was like, I'll fix this. It's going to be fine. By the end of the week, my hands were double in size. I had locked jaw. My jaw was swollen. I couldn't open my mouth. I couldn't bend at the waist. My
Jeez, dude,
feet
that's crazy.
were inflamed. Yeah. It's like, I was like, oh shit, I'm dying.
Yeah, you
Like it
realize
was
something was happening.
insane. Yeah, it was insane. So it took about a year and a half before I was diagnosed with Lyme. No.
Wow, dude, that's crazy.
Yeah. So,
Yeah, back to walking into that
yeah.
process of healing.
So that's a part of it because I had kind of started exploring things before that. And I think some of that was just like losing my job, like when those big things kind of shake us, they kind of shake our identity as well. Like we start realizing, oh, I had identity in the work that I did. And then later when I got sick, it was, oh, I had identity in, being at least one of the fittest dudes in every room, like that was a big part of my identity.
Yeah.
And
I'm guilty of
yeah, of course. Yeah. You're probably the fittest dude in every room though, which is m
So
more annoying.
sometimes.
And yeah, so like so some of those things for identity shaking. So I had taken a few steps to there's this spiritual therapy thing that I did called Sozo. You heard of that? It's like a I'm a believer, so that stuff is kind of part and parcel to my life. Sozo, it's kind of like a prayer ministry, but they kind of delve into just your past, and like what's actually going on there. And so I did that after kind of the highs, like realizing the highs and lows, like, oh, something's really wrong here. So it was in 2019. So I did a little bit of things to just kind of explore before actually like starting real therapy, which is what I did later. And I actually remembered some suppressed memories during one of the Sozos of being abused as a kid. I was like, oh no, like, oh, this is really bad, like, and so there was a gradualness to it. Wasn't like everything just happened in a week, there was some gradualness to that. But then getting sick in 2020, and then of course the world shut down. I just started my business at the end of 2019, so I wasn't doing any business after the world shut down. And so everything really was pressing in, and because everything was pressing in, it created the circumstance where I said, okay, I've got to do real work, or everything is redundant. And during the pandemic, you're like spending a ton of time at home with your kids and with your wife, and you're realizing it was just even more like I wasn't escaping to work every day and feeling good about my accomplishments. It was just like, oh God, I'm going to turn into another failure if I don't do something. So that was a big part of
I know you. So now you said, like, that memory came flooding in, and as we're talking right now, I know you're kind of laughing. Like a memory came in, it was hard,
it.
but like I know that that wasn't like it wasn't funny, and it was probably terrifying,
It's terrifying.
and like I really want to hear, like, what was it like in that moment? Because it's selfishly, it's helpful for me because I love hearing people's perspective on, like, it was terrible. Like, it was really shocking. I would love for you to expound on that.
So that moment specifically was I'd actually I was so I did the Sozo over Zoom, which is kind of crazy, with a guy in England. He was like the practitioner, and so we got to that point, and he kind of like stopped at the section was like, okay, so we should probably stop there today. That's enough, you know? And I think to some degree it was so shocking that it was almost like shock, you know? It was almost like overload. I can't actually take this. But I was in my bedroom and I had to walk out to my kids playing outside and my wife being like, how did it go, you know? And just be like, it's good, I guess. You know, I remember. And so it was like immediate. I think I immediately told her, I've just remembered this. That was really hard. That was hard. It's harder in my experience to talk about that kind of stuff with people you really love because there's so much shame around abuse. You know, you especially as a kid, you know, you feel like it's your fault somehow. So having to admit that to my wife was incredibly difficult. But there was more. I'm laughing again because that's what I do. There was more later that came. There was more memories, more repressed memories that came, and I continued to have to say things to my wife and other people that were really hard, in feeling like a lot of shame and stuff. But
Well, two things. So what is so I want to come back to this, but what is SOZO an acronym or like what is it stand like what exactly
yeah,
is?
I think it's a Greek word.
Okay. And so what are they like what's the because I've heard of what's the one where they kind of move their hand in front of your eyes?
That's called EMDR.
EMDR. So I've heard of EMDR and I know that's a
I've done
really
a lot
popular.
of, I've done a lot of EMDRs as well. Yeah.
And so what's the difference between that and SOZO?
Okay, so SOZO, what's the difference between that and SOZO? SOZO is really, it's actual like prayer ministry. I don't know if you've ever done
So it's
anything
more
like that.
spiritual based, I guess.
You know, it's definitely more spiritual based. Yeah.
Okay,
Like
gotcha.
we started off with you know, the guy that I was doing it with, you know, we started off with just like picture God, you know. And so my eyes are closed, you know, and I did, and he goes, "Well, how far are you from God when you picture him?" You know, and I just immediately started crying. I'm like, "He's up there, I can't get to him, you know, and I don't know why." And so you kind of and that kicks it off, you know, and there's a lot of other questions and a lot of other just it's really, I guess, exploring kind of your relationship with God, but also like how you feel about yourself in conjunction with that, you know. Feel like one of my big convictions that I've had for a long time, and I think it was, I can't remember who said it originally, but it's the idea that like the more we know ourselves, the closer to God we actually can be, you know, and vice versa, because God's inside of us, right? It's like we're made in the image, and that's where he resides. And so when we are really in tune with ourselves, I think we commune with God a lot better.
Wow, that's awesome. So SOZO, EMDR, you said you did a lot of EMDR.
Yeah.
Was that really beneficial?
Yeah, it was. And it really kind of kick started my journey for kind of all things therapeutic in a way. Yeah, I got sick in March of 2020. We were living in Memphis, Tennessee. We sold our home, moved to Nashville by December of 2020. We were super broke. You know, my business was not doing well. But I took some of the proceeds from the house, and I made my first therapy appointment before I ever left Memphis. So I contacted some guys I knew in Nash, and was just like, who do you recommend? And had made my first therapy appointment a few weeks before I got there. So I think we moved on a Sunday or something, and I was in my first therapy appointment by Wednesday. And then, if you've never done like trauma therapy, I spent 2 years doing it, which was crazy and expensive, but it was,
It's worth it.
oh yeah, it's totally worth it. It was, you kind of go and you get to know your therapist a little bit, you know, and then you basically make a timeline of all the really bad shit that's ever happened to you, which is like kind of devastating, you know, because you're just like, oh, that's awful, you know. But you're kind of teasing out, like, what do you know? So with EMDR, I would say if it has any limitations, it's that you kind of need to know what's there to really kind of go after it with EMDR. So yeah, we made a list and we started going after it. And I did dozens of it over the 2 years. And then
Wow.
there was, you know, lots of sessions where we just talked. But the first time I had to do it, I was so scared, man. Because this particular memory was an abuse memory that we were going into, and I got to the office, went to the restroom first before I went in, and I just cried at the urinal, you know, and I was like, I do not want to do this. Like, is there any other way, other than having to like actually dredge the stuff up? And it was not nearly as bad as I was expecting it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
The cool thing. Go ahead.
well, after you finish that thought, I want to go back to when you shared stuff with your wife. Finish that thought.
Yeah. So the kind of the cool thing about any of this kind of, I think, kind of therapeutic stuff, because I actually use another modality now that I work with people with, to it's like a trauma release therapy. But you always kind of end up in a place of like little me, because the trauma's happened in the past, you know? So you're kind of with little me, but you're big me now, you know?
Yeah.
And so having to go back into that very first memory, I was like, I was sitting at our kitchen table as a boy, little boy, like 4, and I was witnessing abuse happening, but big me was there. And so it was not nearly as scary, you know, like as obviously the first event was. And big me was kind of there, and I was protected, you know. So there was very much that kind of sense, and we did a lot of that kind of thing, you know. So for anybody listening, you don't have to be scared of it. It's not nearly.
Yeah. So when you going back to you doing that I guess that first Sozo session, memory comes flooding into your mind. It was very overwhelming. You go out and you share it with your wife, and then you share the consecutive sessions with your wife as well.
Yeah.
What was that like? Like, what was her response, and was it what you thought it would be?
Yeah. that's funny because my wife does not come have a background like this at all. And so I think in some ways, and she and I have talked about this multiple times. So if she heard this, she'd be fine with it. But so there's a little bit of like, okay, you know, like it was kind of like, oh wow. And I think there's a little bit of a misunderstanding from her of like, why haven't you told me this sooner? You know, like, why are you telling me this? Because we've been married almost 13 years now. So this was like 8 or 9. We have 2 kids, you know. It's kind of like, why are you just telling me this now? I think is probably one thought in her head. I think she also doesn't have a personal framework to then go, oh, I understand what that's done to you. So I mean, we were outside and she was like, oh, okay. Interesting. And then she just needed time to think about it. You know, like she wasn't, I don't think we talked about a lot of that stuff till like actually got into like more like detailed kind of discussion on that until later. Like she needed time to process, you know?
Yeah. And
Yeah.
once you guys finally did dive into it, was it a pretty, I guess the story I have in my head about that experience for you is that it could have almost been like a very bonding experience between you two, where now you're sharing these intimate things and you're
Yeah.
having empathy for one another and you're kind of connecting on a deeper level. Did that happen at all?
Yeah, for sure. But I think that happened over time. You know, it wasn't like in that moment. I mean, I think that could happen, but for us in that moment, it was like, okay. And she needed time to think about that. She needed time to digest it. And that's happened a few times. I've had to tell her these kinds of things. And so, but yeah, over time, definitely. Over time, she gets to understand where I've come from, why I struggle with what I struggle with. Why I'm in up and down. Why I gravitate towards alcohol, when on a day when it seems like, I should be fine, things like that. And I have to, but it's allowed me to then, I guess now we're, 5 years removed from that, and I've done a ton of therapy. So I can now it's like I'm it's much easier for me to say, I'm struggling today. I feel really insecure about these things. And she's then able to have grace for those. That stuff,
Yeah, that's been a huge, so as I told you before the podcast, so I'm in a recovery group for sexual addiction. And that's been a huge thing that we've learned is like identifying these emotions and these feelings and then sharing it. Like really putting a label, not just saying I'm angry, being like, okay, no, that's a secondary. Like what's underneath that? Is it fearful? Are you sad? Are you feeling angry? Like what is it? Get to the root, and then sharing it with people in a safe space just allows you to like just you just connect with others, and then you feel supported and loved, and that can become your new coping mechanism.
Awesome. Yes, I love that. I have very emotional children, and so I'm always saying, let's find and name that emotion. We
Oh,
always
that's
start
cool.
there, like let's find and name the emotion, and then let's talk about it. And so my son specifically, he goes straight to like aggression, as a lot of little boys do. So find and name your emotion, but I think, it's essential. And I think what happens, like you're saying, where you kind of find and name that emotion, and then you share it with other dudes. I think men need that so much because we're so terrified to be weak. We're so terrified to even accidentally somebody to go, oh, that guy doesn't have what it takes, So when we are able to share that, and then the other dude across the table goes, yeah, me too. It goes, ah, it frees us to then go, okay, that's okay. That's okay. I actually still have what it takes, and I'm feeling those things because that guy does too. And that's absolutely essential.
Dude, I don't know if you relate to this at all, but for me personally, I think because I identify with like guys who just like, they lift weights, they're gym rats, they're like, Mr. Tough Burly, and like I kind of like want to be that. Like one of my dreams is to be like a, I want to be like a Viking, like I don't know, maybe every guy kind of relates to that. But for me, it's so inspiring when I see a dude who does, like my old boss actually, he's like 6'5", big beard, super strong, successful business. If he ever shares anything that's going on in his heart and he's vulnerable, dude, it like it, I don't know what it is, but I'm like, yes, thank you. Thank you for sharing. Because so many people look at someone like you and they're like, he's got it all together. And you open up the floodgate, it makes it so much easier for someone like myself or anyone else to just like share that and connect. I don't know if that's a thing, but
Huge. Yeah, man, of course. I'm all the time, I have buddies who I talk to, and when they share a real thing, I'm like, thank you so much. Had a buddy talk about just being at some other dude's house who has a big house. He makes more money, has more toys. And he was just like, man, I had to get out of there. Like I wanted out. Like I felt so small, and it was hitting all his buttons, but just to hear that from him, who I would look at and be like, you're so successful, and you're a man that I respect a lot, it's just like, yeah, it's huge, and all of a sudden it makes me rest and go, oh, I can share more with you now,
it really is an even playing field. It's way more of an even playing field than people
Dude,
realize.
yes. Yeah, 100%. 100%.
So I have two questions. So before we dive into
Okay.
like the work you do with men, I want to ask, like, was there ever a, I feel like I know the answer, but I want to ask anyway. Was there ever an aha moment where you got to the end of your recovery and you were like, I'm free. Like,
No.
I'm resolved of all my issues.
Hell no.
Or is it
Absolutely
like,
not.
is it still just like that ongoing process that you keep kind of navigating and you're getting better and better at identifying and coping? Is that where it's at?
Yeah, 100%. I think, and I think this is very much a part of our culture, which is consumeristic, right? Because we're in capitalism, is I can, I will go, now I'm not still in therapy, so don't misunderstand that, but it's like I can go to therapy for the next 3 months, get rid of all my problems, and I'm done. You know, it's like I've paid the money and I'm done. And I would say it doesn't work like that. Like, we're actually always on a journey of transforming who we are, you know, and, you know, if you look back at any kind of like great wisdom tradition, you know, or religion or whatever, like there's the renewing of the mind, and finding that place where you're, it's constant. It never ends, you know? Always so does. I think, yeah. And so I think, I think that's kind of the secret for dudes is, don't buy my program because at the end of it, you're going to be, everything's going to be done. Buy my program because it's going to teach you how to walk in this way. You know, it's going to teach you the posture to have so that you're always growing, you know, into whatever it is. Everybody has a crisis point that brings them to the reason that they're going to go get help. Right. So, but it's this journey, it's being on this journey, it's having this posture that's going to make you continually the better dad or the better husband or the better businessman or the better employer, whatever it is you're looking for, you know?
Yeah. It's cool you say that because I'm in a group for business coaches right now. And it's more tailored to, you know, coaches who want to learn, like essentially like sales, like learning how to sell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And other tactics with like, you know, Instagram and funnels and things or whatever. And so I'm in this coaching group, and one thing they say on the sales calls, which have been super helpful, is like, you have to become the person that you're asking this person to be.
Yeah.
Like if I'm going to talk to someone about, you know, take a leap, you know, buying into this mentor group, becoming a leader and all these things, it's like, if I'm not doing that, like, it's so much harder for me to tell someone to do that. Right. It's like,
sure.
Like I want to get in shape, and I'm going to go to a fat PE coach. It's like, no shot. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm going to go to someone who's actually in shape. But it's funny you say that, because it's like there's no end result. It is literally you're constantly becoming that person. And the more you become that person, the more help you can be to someone else. And it's just on this constant flow.
Yeah, for sure. And I think too, like a part of that is your, there's always more to uncover, you know, so it can't just, there's not a, it can't be a 3-step program or a 3-month program or whatever, right? So it's like you start, you go down a road, and then you realize, oh, actually, I didn't realize how much this was also affecting my marriage. And now I need to be working on that and working on myself so that I can be a better husband and stuff, you know?
Dude, yeah, it can be overwhelming at times. Like, I find this at least in fitness. Sometimes I'll be like, I kind of wish I didn't have to work out again. Like,
yeah.
I wish I could just be in shape forever. Because you're like, the thought of doing it hard stuff forever, you're like, dang, that kind of sucks. But it's just the reality of it. Like,
yeah.
If you want to be in shape, if you want to have a good relationship, if you want to have like good finances, like, you have to constantly work, and you have to learn to love that. And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. And I also have those days where I'm like, I don't want to work out today. And some of those days I just give myself the day off, you know, because the next day I do, you know, like that passion comes back and that drive comes back. But dude, there's days where I'm like, I don't want to sit down with my journal right now and figure out like why I'm so pissed off in this moment, you know? But if I, you know, and sometimes I don't, you know, sometimes I go to negative coping mechanisms instead. But when I do, I'm always like, man, I'm really glad I did that. And I am actually always growing and evolving, you know? So kind of back to what you were saying about like, we can easily, especially as coaches, like get caught up in this, I have to be perfect at all times, which of course we're not, you know? And one of the reasons I stopped doing ministry was because I always had to be perfect, you know? And you can never ask real questions, and you certainly can never have an addiction when you're in that kind of leadership. And so this is a lot healthier for me because I can say, no, I still struggle. You know, I still want to drink alcohol too much. You know, that is something that is very it's very easy for me to go, man, that's going to make it better for at least, you know, the night. That's going to make me feel less anxious, at least for the next 2 hours. But see, I can be really honest about that stuff now.
Yeah.
And I think the reality is that I don't think that stuff ever goes away, you know? So let's not pretend that I somehow, oh, I've beat that. And I don't gravitate towards negative things anymore. Well, of course I do. You know, we all do.
Dude, it's really encouraging to hear you say that and be open like that.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good segue. Let's dive into like you working with men now. Let's say I come to you and I'm like, hey, I need help.
Yeah.
What's step one? What's the first thing you do with men?
Yeah. So step one is really kind of like discovery. So of course we'll spend time talking. I'll ask you a million questions, which I go into that mode really quick, but I think it's because I've just been doing this for so long. So I'll just be like, question, because I'm trying to get to an understanding of where you come from and what really has shaped you. I'll ask questions about your past growing up, what your parents are like, what your dad's like, what your relationship with them is like, what your marriage is like. And as we're doing that, I don't know, in a context like this, at least, because I do some biz coaching and stuff like that. So I talk to employees, which is a different kind of thing. But for somebody who's like here and like wants to be here, people are generally pretty open once they get to that point, you know? And so you would be saying all sorts of stuff that I'm like either taking notes on or mentally being like, okay, I got to press on that. And I got to press on that. And I got to press on that. No, that's a red flag. And you may not even be realizing it, you know? But I think I've just been doing this for so long and people's problems are complicated, but people aren't complicated. Like there's a simplicity to just the natural world and that we all exist in, you know, and there's kind of these principles that exist for everybody. You know, we all want to be loved. We've all been hurt. We create coping mechanisms around that. And so I'm like picking off the coping mechanism. But I have a personality assessment that I use sometimes just to like get a quick, like, oh, you're this kind of person, at least, you know, in this, you're this, but at least right here I can go, okay. And then when I read that back to people, they'll go, oh my God, that's crazy. That's why I struggle with this, this, and this. And I'm like, yes, it is, you know, and then that opens up more avenues for that. So discoveries would be the first part of it.
So discovery, it leads you to, I guess, maybe a general answer of where they're at and the things you really need to dial in on.
Yeah.
And then that's right. Go ahead.
And then they'll have a few things that they're like, this is my, it's kind of called a crisis point, but they'll be like, my crisis point is, you know, finances right now.
Yeah.
And then we start talking about it. And it's what's really funny about somebody's crisis point is it's usually not the crisis point. It's usually something else. It just feels like the major crisis point. So somebody will come to me, this happened recently, and it was about business. It was about work, you know? And then we started talking and it was like, oh, it's not about work. It's about your like, that's the main crisis point that we actually have to talk about. And that's very common. And I don't know, I think the way we operate is we just get on with things no matter how hard it is. Like I always say, like the sun's going to come up tomorrow. We're going to get up. We're going to feed the kids. We're going to go to work no matter what's happened. And we just kind of push things aside and keep going. So it's very common that people don't actually know what is really going on. And so those are some of the first things I'm looking for. Yeah. Like what's really going on here?
If you can share it, like what's the most common thing you see?
Oh gosh, on somebody's crisis point, or actually,
yeah.
Gosh, I don't know that I've ever like vocalized this. I think it's probably. It's probably some kind of broken relationship, actually.
Like from the past?
From the past or current. So if you're married, then there's often like some significant conflict, which makes sense, right? If you're, if you've come to me because your business is not doing well, which means you're struggling financially, that's bringing up a lot of fears, then your marriage is going to be probably in trouble as well, right? Because your wife is expecting you to come home with money and provide and protect, you know? So usually there's stuff in there. But then, yeah, past relationships, you know, the dad one's always really big, parents, stuff like that.
Yeah. The dad one resonates with me now, especially being a dad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude, I know.
You know, like I didn't have the great, well, I had a pretty decent relationship with my dad, but he was just very inconsistent. And so I've noticed that about myself in my life is like, there's just these ebbs and flows of inconsistency. And I've kind of traced it back to like, I've seen that, now I'm emulating that.
Yeah.
And I've definitely noticed it carry over into my relationships. Like, you know, I'm a single dad. And so if I were to look at how our relationship went, I can definitely see it was much like my parents' relationship. Makes sense. Right. But being a dad now and having a son, it's like, my deepest fear is like, I just don't want my son to feel like I don't love him. Like,
yeah.
I just want him to know, no matter what, come rain or shine or whatever's happening, like, I am there for you and I love you. And I do it imperfectly, but like,
yeah,
that hits so deep for me.
Yeah. That's, yeah, man, me too. And I kind of joke, like, my kids one day are going to be like, sometimes I wonder if I go overboard because I tell my kids I love them like 85 times a day or something.
Yeah.
And one day they're going to be like in front of a therapist, like, I think my dad, I think he smothered me or something. Like, go the opposite direction. But dude, that, I'm the same way. I feel like I am always, I try to be really in tune with, and I actually made a post about this the other day. I tell my kids, I tell them both that they're my favorite, and they've never questioned it, which is funny. They're 10 and 7. Like, they're never like, I can't be your favorite because she's your favorite. And it's just kind of a funny thing that I've always done, but I think that I'm hoping that they don't really question it because they feel so secure, you know? And that I've provided that for them. But it's a hope that I have because I don't actually know what that's like. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't get that. And so, but my hope is that I'm giving them such an internal sense of at least as much unconditional love as I can muster, you know, as an imperfect human being. They're getting this sense of unconditional love, of being really accepted for who they are, being like deeply loved, you know, the affection and everything that goes with that. 'Cause I'm a very affectionate dad. And that is, because this is what I didn't have, that is giving them this internal identity that is so much more bulletproof than what I have had to kind of grow up with, you know? So, just like, you know, I think, some parents like worry that their kids are going to grow up and like be drug addicts. I worry that my kids are going to grow up and like be in like bad relationships, you know, like, being like deeply hurtful relationships.
Yeah.
And I want to safeguard them against that just with love, you know,
yeah.
That they really know who they are and they're not succumbing to that as easy. My wife grew up in a much more secure, family, and I'm always surprised. She's very kind of like, she laughs all the time. She's very joyful. I tell her she's a raging extrovert, you know, and so she's not, we don't get in like deep theological or, you know, or philosophical discussions a lot or whatever. But she is just very secure in who she is. And I'm always so amazed, at that. Like, I was a bit of an ass when we first got married, you know, 'cause I had all these unhealed things that I hadn't worked on. And I try to be really kind of controlling, and all the stuff came out of me that I didn't know was there. And she would just wouldn't have any of it, you know, and she's not a confrontational person. You know, like some people might say that she's fairly submissive. kind of wife, but she was like, "Nope, you're not going to treat me that way." And I was like, "Oh, okay."
That's wow.
What's that like? That's amazing. But we talk about it, and I credit it to like she just comes from a good place. She was well loved, you know.
Yeah, she had seen that emulated, and so she knows exactly what she had that standard essentially.
Yeah, yeah, and she just has a deep rooted sense of her own self worth.
Wow,
you know, awesome. Like you can't treat me that way. That's not who I am. And I'm like, oh, okay. I had to change real quick in the first year.
I was about to say, there's no quicker way to learn than that right there. You're like,
dude, yeah, what? Yeah,
gotta figure it out.
Yeah, I was the asshole for the first couple of years until I realized that she had some problems too, but yeah.
So what is step three with your men? So we walked through, what's step three?
Yeah. So I try to really treat everybody specifically like, you know, some people really, it really is their business, you know? And so we start kind of getting into that and help them with that kind of stuff. But I have a course called, I call it the B course, and it's really an identity framework. And it's fairly comprehensive, and it takes about 6 months to get through. And so I put everybody through that. So, that is, the first module is, like I said earlier, it's called Discover, and it's kind of looking back at the people and forces that shaped you. And it's really trying to come away with some negative roots, which I hate like focusing on the negative, but in this instance, we just don't do that very often, you know? And so I really want to get back to that place of understanding what are the underlying things that are causing the negative behaviors or the blockers in your life that you've come to me for in the first place anyway. So we have to get to that. That's really cool because people, they come away with things like that. They would be like, I would never have thought that that was in my background or that thing that I've always talked about actually caused such a negative, you know, thing in me. But those negative roots form a man's identity, you know, until we do something about them. And I think that's what happens at midlife when dudes have actual midlife crises is they you have this moment of like, oh no, like how did I become this person? You know, like I thought I was somebody else. I thought I was becoming somebody else, but I've actually just become this person I don't like, or I just became my dad, you know? So Discover is the first one. Develop is the second module. And that is actually, we go through some exercises to find out what your strengths actually are, what your values actually are. And we write an identity statement at the end of that. So it's kind of like, you're at this point, you've come to me because you don't like who you are. So let's figure out all the things that created you, made you into this version of yourself. And then let's decide who you actually want to be, which was such a revolutionary concept when I first even wrote this module. Because I was like, can we really just pick our identity? Or am I just making something up, you know? But actually, I think it's very healthy to go through this process and go, no, I am really good at these things. These are my strengths. And these things I deeply value. And they're principles that I actually want to live my life by now, not these things that come from this broken place. And so that's been crazy cool because you see guys start to reconnect with things that they just laid dormant in their life for a long time. You know, yeah. I had a guy go through and then like, wrote this amazing identity statement. It was like poetic. And then like within 2 weeks, he was like in Costa Rica. And like the first part of his identity statement was about like his love for adventure. And he was like, dude, I totally shut that down. You know, I've been trying to run this business for so long and I shut down my sense of adventure. So he like flew off to Costa Rica and ran around in the jungle for a while. And really found himself, you know? And then the third module is called is discipline, which I know we all love so much. Discipline, and it's just walking some of that stuff out. So as you go through the process, when you get the negative roots, they naturally turn into, I call them growth focuses. And so I have a couple tools in there. It's like there's one, it's called the Daily Reset, and it's just designed to be like a 10-minute just reset, like getting your mind back in the right place. You know, this is how I feel today. But here's my identity statement. I know that I'm working on these things. You do a little bit of journaling And then there's a weekly recap where you get to actually, so you're actually creating data at that point. So you get to go back and go, oh, 5 out of the 7 days I've been really anxious. Like, and if you're not tapped into that, it's like, what is actually causing that?
Right.
I'm a firm believer that we're on autopilot most of the time, and we're not realizing, you know, what's actually causing our stress and our anxiety and the stuff that's making us run to the negative. So.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, well, after you, so you got one more module, or because I was gonna.
No, that's
you,
it. Yeah, that was all three.
How you came up with this framework?
I lived it, dude.
You lived it.
I lived it. Yeah, man. I had to hit rock bottom. So yeah, I came up with it. It was a couple years ago. So I wrote that course a couple years ago. And I've been doing coaching for longer than that. So, I had a guy who came to me and wanted coaching, and he was a young man in his 20s. We started getting into some stuff, and I'll use other tools, you know, like I'll use other people's tools too. Like, there's a Brené Brown book that I give out a lot, especially when dudes don't have any language at all, to kind of go off of. So I think I'd sent him this, I sent him one of Brené's books, who I think she's amazing. And, then I was like, why don't I just write some stuff for you? I bet I could write you some things that would really help. And that's kind of when I started writing that course. I just started writing down exercises that this guy could go through that would really start to tease out things like his strengths and his values and where he comes from and why and all that kind of stuff. So it took me a good 6 months, man. It's like 85 pages or something. It was like a little book. Yeah. I can't believe I did it, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was. So from a business perspective, practically, I find it interesting when people say, because sometimes we can say things like, yeah, I created this thing, and we say it so like lackadaisical. You're like, oh, you created that in a day. But like, people don't realize like how hard it really is to create a course and a thing, like even content, like putting content together, record, like,
yeah,
it's
dude,
hard.
I hate content,
dude. Yeah.
Hey,
it's miserable.
Me. Well, I'm not good at it. You're good at it. You have like a ton of followers. I'm not good at it. Clearly, or people would follow me more. Yeah, I hate the content thing. It's much easier for me to make something like that. Like I just started doing research a couple days ago for a new, I think it's going to end up being like a kind of a small ebook. But it's really, the question it's answering is like, for men, how did we get here and what do we do now? Mm-hmm. I don't really have a title yet. It's kind of tracking a little bit of like generational stuff from the Industrial Revolution, and then talking about generational things, you know, and kind of like why were our dads the way they were, which means this is why I'm the way I am, and then kind of giving some real life stories, and then some what do I do now? Like, what's the actual solution here for me?
Yeah.
And I'm much more at home in that than I am at like, you know, trying to come up with a pithy phrase and put it into a meme that catches people's attention and gets them to like my, you know, that I hate that.
Dude, yeah, it's
yeah. You're great at it though, man.
Dude, well,
You got me hooked.
So honestly, my secret is, I just heard people say,
you don't do like, any of it yourself.
Well, eventually I won't be, but right now I'm doing all of it.
Yeah.
But like so many people who are like, you know, master content creators, they would say, go through other people's viral content and just see what was really good, their style. And so that's what I did, dude. Every night I was just like going through people's videos, and I'd watch like where they were making cuts, the camera angles, this, that, and the other things they were saying. And then I just kind of tried to make it into my own, like my own style, which is a little bit deeper, a little bit more of like the philosophical stuff.
Yeah,
and that was it. And I just started putting, like, if you could scroll back to like my back in February stuff,
yeah,
you'd be like, what is going on? This is terrible.
You're like, oh yeah, that's funny. I'll have to look at that now. It'll make me feel better about myself.
Dude, making content's awful. It's really challenging. So for your course, what do you deliver that? Is you deliver it as like a packet, or is it on like Teachable?
Yeah. It is on Teachable, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, and so then they kind of just they go through the modules.
Yeah. It's yeah. So right now it's priced to just kind of buy as a one-off and go through it.
Yeah.
I have found it's much better in with some kind of coaching onto it, or at least a group. You know, I've done groups with it, and that's really great because then those guys form a bond and they can talk to each other and stuff. But yeah, it's unteachable.
Man.
I think I eventually want it. I think I just want it paper bound, man. I think I just want an actual thing that people can buy. Like when I wrote it as a journal.
Yeah.
Just haven't gotten to the step of actually releasing it like that, where you could just buy it. But I think the act of having to sit down and it does something in our heads to actually write rather than sit on a screen is really good for us and therapeutic, actually.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. How long have you been doing this now? 5 years?
I've been coaching for 9 years, kind of outside of Christian ministry, and I started Live Courageous about 3 years ago.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
So I had this question earlier. I want to go back to this before we wrap up.
Yeah.
Coming back to the identity statement, how have you found that to align with, all right, so our identity as believers is like I'm a child of God. Like I'm formed in the image of God. I have value and worth ascribed to me because God created me, right? Like
Yeah.
that, like and if you're a believer, it's like I'm a child of God,
Yeah.
saved by grace. Because when you talked about making an identity statement, I didn't hear you say that, but I know you're a believer. And
Yeah.
so I'm curious, how have you found those two to align? And do you prescribe that to your men as like something to hang on to and cling to as well?
Yeah. So, my course, I guess, would I would say is like, it's not religious, and I made it that way on purpose. Like, I wanted it to be available to all dudes who, you know, kind of found their way to it. And I think when we go, this is a Christian course for Christian men. You don't get the people that might really need it. You know, you kind of section them off. So, I think the identity statement is really helpful because it is a tool that every man can use no matter where, so where they are on their journey. So kind of my belief with that kind of stuff is everybody's on a journey towards God in some way. And I'm real big on not like making you get on my journey with me. It's like as your coach or as the man that's kind of further down the path, like helping you, like I'm gonna come walk beside you on your journey. And so if your journey doesn't have that, then that's okay. Because maybe one day it will, or I thumbs up again. Maybe one day it will, or not, but that's just not, it's not, I guess I firmly feel like it's not my place to push that on anyone. You know what I mean? But for the believer, yeah, let's, you know, put it in there for sure. And for me, I've been a believer for so, I mean, I was raised in it. I have a master's in it, you know, in theology and stuff. So I've been so enmeshed in that place. Like it's just so deeply a part of me. So I think the identity statement I wrote using my own tools, didn't necessarily say that, but it's not because it's not who I carry that with me all the time, and I pray all the time, and I'm talking to God all the time. You know, for me, I was really after, I want to figure out who I am. You know, I want to figure out what's in, what strengths, what values, what things I really hold dear. And it was really about teasing that out.
That's awesome.
That makes sense.
No, it does make a ton of sense because that's something I wrestle with. I
Yeah.
think about that a lot. I think a lot of believers really do wrestle with that. It's like because sometimes I can feel guilty about like thinking a certain way, but I'm not thinking of it in a biblical way. But then if I rewrite it in a biblical way, it feels like I'm like dampening myself. And then I'm like, I don't know how to wrestle with this. I don't know how to,
Yeah.
I don't know what, I don't know, like, if I just, I sometimes I just don't even know how to operate within that, but I want to, you
Yeah.
know?
Yeah. I think we give too little credit to kind of our own humanity, and we try to over spiritualize things too much, probably. Because the reality is, as believers, right, like we believe that we are a child of God. His spirit actually lives inside of us. And I think when we operate from that place, he's always with us. And I think we try to, like you're saying, like we try to rewrite everything in a biblical Christian message to do this and this and this and this. And I think that actually is kind of tripping us up a lot, you know, from the simplicity of actual relationship with God.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a process I'm still walking through right now, is really figuring out how to balance that.
Yeah.
That's something I wrestle with so often. So often.
Yeah. We should talk more about it later.
Dude, I would actually love to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
100%. Well, dude, thank you for your time.
Dude, thank you, man.
This was really great. I think people are going to get a lot of value out of this, man, especially the dudes out there who are just, they know that there's something going on,
yeah,
but there's just a little bit of fear there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So where can people find you on social media?
Instagram is @cshivs. Actually, I have a much bigger following on LinkedIn, Charles Shivers, which is cool. Funny. I'm going to... Kyle, you have inspired me to start a podcast. You've showed me how you can do it through this app. So I'm going to do that. And livecourageous.org.
Cool.
Yeah, man.
Awesome. You guys out there listening, if you feel like there's something holding you back, dive into it. And this is me preaching to myself too. Like I still there's tons of work I've got to do as well.
Yeah. So
reach out
me
to
me too.
Yeah, like it's an ongoing process.
Yeah.
You can reach out to myself, you can reach out to Charles here, and we would always be more than welcome.
Absolutely. If anybody just even wants to just chat, like, hey, I don't know, maybe, or, you know, I got some things going on and I don't even know what to do next, like, reach out, of course. Yeah. That's the first step.
All right, bro.
All right, bro.
Your day, okay?
Thanks, dude. Talk to you soon.
All right, man.
See ya.